Reynolds Journalism Institute at the University of Missouri. Welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. In September of 2014, voters in Scotland went to the polls to decide whether it should remain a part of the United Kingdom or become an independent country. Ultimately, a majority chose to stay a part of the UK. But now in June, the entire United Kingdom will vote on whether it should remain a part of the European Union. This so-called Brexit, according to supporters, would allow the UK to gain better control over immigration and free it from onerous EU regulations. But opponents of the Brexit say it would devastate the UK economy, with PricewaterhouseCoopers saying it could cost the country $142 billion and almost 1 million jobs in the next 4 years. On this edition of Global Journalist, a look at the potential benefits and drawbacks of the UK leaving the European Union, as well as what might happen if the referendum fails. Our first guest today is Sebastian Malaby in Washington, D.C. He's a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. Sebastian, welcome to Global Journalist.
Good to be with you.
Sebastian Malaby, back us up just a bit. Tell us, the UK first joined the European community back in the 1970s. Remind our listeners why the UK joined in the first place.
Well, actually, one question is, why did it join so late? Because other European countries in the aftermath of the Second World War had joined together to form the early version of the European community. And Britain had stayed aloof because it had always felt that its identity was not necessarily going to be bound up with continental Europe. It was drawn to its former colonies. It was drawn to some concept of the Anglosphere, which led it to look towards the United States. And so it's always been ambivalent about its relationship with the European Union. And in a sense, when it did go in the early 70s, it was a very transactional relationship. It was sort of, is this good for our economy? And if it is, we'll do it. But if it's not, we have no emotional or sort of political urge to be part of this. And that's the difference between Britain and, say, France or Germany or Holland, all of which I think had a kind of urge to avoid a repeat of the Second World War. And for them, the EU was more than just an economic transaction.
So tell us now, why, how did we get to the point where we're having a referendum now, several decades later, on whether or not the UK should stay in?
Well, there's been this tradition of out to the European Union, especially in the Conservative Party. That's the party that's now in power in Britain. Some chunk of that party since the early 90s has been what we call Eurosceptic. In other words, they look at the pluses and the minuses. They think that the loss of sovereignty to Brussels outweighs any purported benefit from free trade. And they've just been kind of, they've enjoyed, frankly, poking fun at some of the more petty regulations emanating from the European Union. And they've kind of built up this narrative that it's a bit, if you're talking, you know, think about it in an American political context, it's a bit like in some states, you know, the distant federal government in Washington is blamed for all manner of evils. So too, in the United Kingdom, it's been tempting politically to blame distant Brussels bureaucracy for all manner of things that people don't like.
You mentioned the role of conservatives sort of as leading this Eurosceptic movement. Prime Minister David Cameron is a conservative, and he's sort of the leading spokesman for the UK to stay in Europe. Tell us about his role in this.
Well, he's trying to manage a split within his party. I mean, imagine a sort of moderate Republican leader with a sort of Tea Party on his flank and then the traditional Republicans on the other side, and he's trying to straddle these two groups and keep them together. That's kind of what's going on in Britain. You've got Prime Minister Cameron, who himself is sort of mildly Eurosceptic, but broadly, when it, you know, push comes to shove, he's decided it's better to stay in the European Union. He decided in the past to placate the skeptical wing of his party that was giving him grief over European Union membership by saying, look, you know, if we win the next election, that was the election in 2015, last year, then I promise that we will have a referendum. And you guys can have your shot at leading the country out if you can win that vote. Now, this was a sort of promise he didn't expect to have to deliver on, since that it was predicted at the time that if the Conservatives were back in government, it would be in a coalition. Coalition would be with the centrist Liberal Democratic Party. That party would have opposed the referendum. So Cameron could have said, yeah, I know I promised this, but since we didn't win the election outright, our coalition partners are demanding that we not have the referendum. So I think he felt that it would be an out. He wouldn't have to deliver. And also, he didn't predict, of course, that Europe would now be in the midst of this massive migration crisis, which has poisoned attitudes towards Brussels.
Well, you talked about when the UK got into the European Union back in the 1970s, that there was this sense that it was a transactional relationship and that there was sort of this cultural affinity, these ties with the United States and with the UK's former colonies. What role is the US playing in this?
Well, the US sort of political beats, whether we're talking about the president himself, because President Obama is expected to come to Britain soon and make some kind of statement in favor of Britain staying in the EU. But I mean, that's a more broadly shared view amongst leaders in the United States. For example, Richard Haass, the president of the Council of Foreign Relations, where I work, has taken an early stand that it would be bad for Britain and bad for the US if Britain were to vote to leave. And the reasons are as follows. You know, one is simply that Britain has always had a strong alliance with the US. So from a US perspective, having a good ally at the table in Brussels when collective decisions are made for the EU is an asset. You want British influence to be strong within Europe, because that British influence is likely to be exercised in a direction that is congenial to the United States. That's one thought. Another thought is that economically, the United States has an interest in a strong European economy that it can trade with and share prosperity with. And it's not going to be good for Britain's economy or indeed for Europe's economy if Britain gets out of the EU. There'll be a lot of uncertainty, and that'll cost the continent economically and potentially reopen the Eurozone crisis, which has subsided in the last year or so.
Sebastian Malaby, thanks so much for joining us.
Good to be with you.
A reminder, you're listening to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. This week, a look at the upcoming vote over whether the UK should leave the European Union and the potential impact it may have on the region. We're going to broaden our discussion now with three other guests joining us from London. Andy McSmith, a freelance journalist, most recently a political correspondent with The Independent. Oliver Norgrove, a contributing writer to Huffington Post and part of the Vote Leave campaign. And from Bedford, England, Mike Smithson, a blogger who runs the website politicalbetting.com. Welcome all of you to Global Journalist. Mr. Smithson, if you could tell us sort of what do the polls tell us right now about public sentiment in the UK?
The polls tell us that this is extremely tight. There have been two out in the last 24 hours, both of them showing that it's level pegging. But if you dig down beneath the polls, you're finding quite a lot of concern about the risk of the change. And in fact, the Times had a poll this morning showing that quite a strong margin worried about risk of the move.
Well, Oliver Norgrove, you are part of the Vote Leave campaign. Give us your reasons for why you think the UK should be out of Europe.
Well, for me, I think, forgive me for sounding a little old-fashioned, but I think that countries should govern themselves. I think that the UK has been somewhat sidelined and marginalized by certain things which have gone on in the European Union, high immigration, energy costs, things of that nature. I think that Britain would be, I think, far more prosperous as an independent nation. I think we have far more bargaining power outside than we do inside. And actually, I think that what we are seeing in Europe, and it's actually a huge irony, actually, that now the European Union is now, I think, pretty much the principal obstacle to the maintenance of a peaceful, but more importantly, a democratic Europe. And I think that continued EU membership will be a huge kind of dent in British democracy. And I think that that poses a danger to us as the British people.
Well, Andy McSmith, let me give you your chance to respond. You're part of the Stay campaign. Tell us why you feel the way you do.
I should say, you mentioned in your introduction the Scottish referendum when Scotland voted on to leave the UK. It was an interesting campaign in that all the enthusiasm was with those who wanted to leave, but they lost the vote. Now, if you look at this referendum on Europe, I mean, nobody on the those of us who want to stay in is particularly wildly keen about the European project. I think people may have been 30 years ago, but now we know that it's got all kinds of problems and creates problems for us. But there are huge advantages to belonging to this vast trading bloc, and it also gives Europe a collective power and clout in the world that it wouldn't have if we separated the way Oliver wants us to into 28 little competing nation states.
Well, Mike Smithson, you heard Andy say that there is a lot of more momentum and passion on the Leave side. Can you give us just sort of a breakdown? What do the demographics look like for supporters of Leave?
Yeah, the supporters of Leave, the ones who want to get out of the EU, they're principally the less affluent. They're principally people in the less educated, people without college education. And most of all, they're principally old people. And from an electoral perspective, that matters because the old, they're the ones who are much, much more likely to vote. Whereas most of the support for the biggest support coming for staying comes from the younger age group. And we know that they are much less likely to vote in elections. So that's why it's on a knife edge.
Mike, if I can interrupt, you yourself said that there's a lot of fear about change. Now, it may well be that older voters are more likely to vote and currently rather more sceptical about Europe than younger voters, but they're also the ones who are most sceptical of change, are they not?
Oh, indeed, and I think that is an amazing dilemma because we saw in the Scottish referendum in September 2014 how it was the older age groups who just were so worried by it. And my view is that probably the old are going to be much more susceptible to what's being known here as Project Fear, because there's no doubt that those who want us to stay are just going to present all sorts of issues and problems and prospective calamities that will happen. And my guess is that that would, at the end of the day, lead to a stay victory.
Well, let me turn this to Oliver Norgrove then, because immigration has been sort of the dominant theme in this discussion. Is it your view that there are just too many Polish plumbers or Hungarian waiters in the UK? I mean, have open borders, have they really hurt people economically there?
I don't have a problem with Polish plumbers or anything like that, but what does need to be addressed here, firstly, is the effect that mass EU migration has had, firstly, on wages in terms of compression, and secondly, in terms of the effect on house prices. For instance, we have a huge housing crisis in the UK, and I think that mass migration has in many ways actually worsened the situation. What annoys me about this argument is that nobody ever seems to address the underlying problem here with our relationship with the European Union, and that is that we have an unfair, discriminatory immigration policy. We have an open border policy with 27 countries in Europe. But many, many hardworking, deserving people from South America or Asia or Africa actually aren't able to come here because they don't qualify. And that seems to me to be unfair and unethical.
Andy, what's your take on this immigration issue?
Well, we talk about there being a Leave campaign in this country. There are actually two Leave campaigns. And judging by the way Oliver's talking, he's part of the sort of mainstream, respectable Leave campaign that the Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, is leading. There is also a rather wilder campaign that the two of them, two sides, are not on good terms with each other. And it is the wilder element who are pushing the issue of immigration, because if we were to leave the EU, the assumption is that we would then want to negotiate a free trade agreement with the EU that we have just left. And if the Norwegian or the Swiss examples are anything to go by, we would have to accept the free movement of labour. So leaving the EU in that sense would not affect the number of Polish, Hungarian waiters or Polish cleaners who are coming here to find work. They would have the same rights to come here, which is why campaigns. Because there is
Yeah, Oliver, jump in.
Yeah, sorry, can I make a point there? I think that in terms of a free trade agreement, nobody here is suggesting that this Brexit is going to be perfect and not a utopian. But one difference the UK has far more, has a lot more bargaining power than we're not a Norway or a Switzerland. We're the fifth largest economy in the world. We have more bargaining power. We have more influence in the world as a country. We're a more powerful country. So I don't think the comparison is as accurate as you might think.
But your problem is that you can't promise anything. That when it comes down to it, on June 23rd, as people go to the polling stations to put their crosses on the ballot form, you have to convince them that this new void is actually going to produce what's the result that you think it's going to. And I think that Leave has actually it can be criticised for not doing enough groundwork to get to this referendum stage. And also on the point on immigration, the fact is that in terms of the polling, the one major issue month in, month out, which dominates the UK is feeling about immigration. And the Leave needs to absolutely major on that, because that's the one that I think will have resonance.
So, Oliver, I'll let you address that just one last time, because it does seem like Leave is in a bit of a tight spot here, in that some members of the Leave movement have said they might accept free movement of people as part of a free trade deal outside of the EU, and yet that seems to be sort of the fundamental issue for many people.
There is confusion here, and I accept what both of them have said. I think both of them are correct. And what the Leave campaign has done, wrongly in my view, is that we have divided, but we divided before we even started, and that, I think, broke down any kind of unified, coordinated approach. Had this been my decision from the very start, it would have been one track. It would have been one system, one campaign. With a more unified approach towards the referendum. I think that Mr. Smithson is correct when he says that we kind of have, or at least appear to have lacked the groundwork here, because there are so many notable divides between the two groups, and I think that that for me has been a mistake. I think that we have the more convincing argument, speaking on behalf of Vote Leave, I think we have the more convincing argument than what we call grassroots out, because I think we're more wide-ranging and more mainstream, and I think we're less extreme. But in terms of free movement, I think personally I would accept it as an alternative. I would accept EFTA membership over EU membership. But I am convinced, and this is the principal point here, I am convinced that the UK can negotiate and mould its own unique relationship, because we are more powerful. We are not a Norway, we are not a Switzerland, and that, I think, is the key point here.
This is Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. This week, a look at the upcoming vote over whether the UK should leave the European Union and the potential impact it will have on the region. Our guest this week, Andy McSmith, a freelance journalist, most recently a political correspondent with The Independent; Oliver Norgrove, a contributing writer for The Huffington Post and part of the Vote Leave campaign; and Mike Smithson, a blogger who runs the website politicalbetting.com. A reminder that if you're interested in more Global Journalist content, visit us online at globaljournalist.org. There you can read our ongoing series of interviews with journalists in exile around the world in coverage of foreign affairs and press freedom issues. We're also on social media. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Global Journ. Andy McSmith, I wanted to ask you about the issue of Scotland. The Scots narrowly voted to stay in the United Kingdom a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. What's going to happen in Scotland if the UK votes to get out of the European Union?
I think it's in papers written votes come out, the Scots will vote to stay in. If that happens, then I think on the day after the referendum, you'll see the First Minister of Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon, go straight in front of cameras and say that the English have no right to take the Scots out of the EU, and they will call for a second referendum in the hope that they can...
I'm sorry, Andy, we're losing your audio just a bit. Let me turn that to Mike Smithson.
Yeah. Yes, certainly. I agree with Andy. I think if it so happens that the UK votes out and Scotland votes in, then no doubt that Nicola Sturgeon, the Scottish National Party, she will immediately come to the fore and she will be demanding a second referendum, because because their position is entirely different, and it simply reinforces the case. So I think that is a real big powder keg that could happen. And certainly the polling is suggesting that England is much, which is about 90% of the UK, England is much more Eurosceptic and much more likely to support Leave than Scotland is, or Wales and Northern Ireland, the other bits of the UK.
And does that not sound...
Go ahead, sorry, Oliver.
Does that not sound a little bit contradictory in the sense that the SNP favour, the Scottish National Party favour independence, and Brexit, in many senses, equals independence? It is the most bizarre concept that the Scottish National Party favour federal Europe, they favour European federalism. It doesn't seem to me to make much sense. I wondered what your thoughts were on that.
I think you've got to talk that.
Well, it looks nonsensical, but again, there's no doubt that huge passions were aroused in 2014. That we saw that how at the last general election in the UK that the Scottish National Party won 56 out of the 59 Scottish seats. They are enormously powerful. They believe that this is in reach, and in many ways. It will be in the SNP's interest if the country as a whole voted to leave.
Well, Andy McSmith, let me turn this back to you. I want to ask you about a couple current events and how that may be affecting this campaign. One is the recent terror attacks in Belgium. Is that affecting the dynamic in this campaign? And then the other is the Prime Minister David Cameron has been in the news in recent days over his involvement with an offshore shell company, or his family's involvement with an offshore shell company. Is that changing the dynamic?
Well, the Brexit, the Belgian attack, in the immediate aftermath, there were some people saying that this was a reason for staying out because it would be better, we were less likely to be attacked by terrorists. But I don't think that argument runs, partly because the worst attack that happened in the UK in July 2007 in London was by people born and bred in Britain. So I think that's irrelevant. The issue of the Panama Papers is more important because until yesterday, almost the only effective politician campaigning to stay in was David Cameron. He seemed to be carrying the whole campaign himself, and then he was really, you know, put off his stroke and spent a whole week defending his father's involvement in the Panama Papers affair. As it happens today, the leader of the Labour Party has finally come out and made a strong statement in favour of the EU. So that one may fade away. But there is no doubt that those of us who want to stay in the campaign for the moment, we need David Cameron. He is a very effective campaigner. He is the guy who can carry opinion in the South of England.
And Oliver Norgrove, there is another politician coming to the UK, as Sebastian Mallaby referenced. U.S. President Barack Obama is scheduled to make an appearance in the UK to campaign for stay. What's your take on the U.S. president's involvement in this?
I mean, frankly, I don't think it's any of the president's business. It seems to me to be an unnecessary card up the sleeve of the prime minister to bring in somebody high profile to galvanise the British public and to tell us all that we need to remain or whatever. There are valid arguments for remaining. There are valid arguments for leaving. It would be ridiculous to assume otherwise. But what I don't want to say, thank you very much, is the leader of another country with other responsibilities who has a mandate for a completely different set of people. It doesn't seem to me to be worth his time coming. And I have to say I have faith that I don't think that many, many people's minds will be changed by the president, or at least I hope not.
And Mike Smithson, what's your take, and also on the involvement of other European leaders in this?
I think other European leaders actually probably act as a negative, and they probably reinforce the Leave campaign. President Obama is enormously popular in Europe, and he's enormously popular in the UK. And I think that if he did come, and I've not actually had confirmation of this visit, if he does come, I think that will be quite important. It will be all part of raising what we call here Project Fear, which is the way that the Remain campaign is doing. If Obama says there's huge risks to all sorts of things, then I think that I can see why the Leave campaign will be objecting and shouting foul.
Well, Andy McSmith, let me turn this to you for your take on this as well. And also, I was hoping you could elaborate just a little bit more on the economic issue. What happens sort of the day after the referendum takes place. If the UK decides to stay in the EU, is it finished? Is this debate over?
I think it probably is over. I suppose it's theoretically possible we could have another referendum in 2 years and decide we made a mistake, but I don't think that will happen. I suspect that if the outers win on June 23rd, that's it, we're out. And there'll be years and years of negotiations between the British government and the EU to try and create free trade agreements. And some people say it'll take 2 years. It certainly won't be done in less. I'd say some people say it'll take 10 years. It certainly won't be done in less than two. And Barack Obama, what is rather ironic about this is that certainly with the traditional Tory right who wanted to get us out of Europe, their argument was that our natural ally was America, that we should always think of ourselves as being sort of part of the Atlantic Alliance, not part of alliance with French people, German people. And now there is the leader of the free world coming along and telling us that we shouldn't leave the EU. I think it puts the right wing of the Tory party in a rather difficult place.
Well, Oliver Norgrove, I wanted to ask you about this immigration question again, since it is such an important one. Essentially, this won't change the UK's immigration policies for people coming from South Asia, from Africa. So is this something that is likely to change going forward? How do you see that?
Well, I mean, you're correct that it won't. I don't think it will have a huge effect on anybody living outside of the European Union. But outside of the European Union, we don't have open borders and we don't have free movement. So that I think the real change will be if we were to leave the EU, and in which case the case would be closed. I don't think we would be allowed back in. The amount of fuss that we cause, I think the European Union partly are sick of us, to be honest. In terms of the immigration question, I think Leave definitely has the upper hand there because immigration from the European Union has been so high for so long. I think it's starting to, I think rightly, worry many of us. And I think that, like you say, I can't see it affecting many, many people outside of the European Union, but at least, and this is the point that I think is the most important to make, at least we will have, or will be more likely to have, a fair level playing field in terms of an immigration policy, with everybody from around the world having a far more equal chance of coming to the UK.
Mike Smithson, we have just about 30 seconds left. What do you see happening in the election? What happens the morning after?
I thought you'd ask me that, and I was hoping you wouldn't. I think it's probably going to be Remain, but by quite a small margin.
By quite a small margin. And yeah, what do you see happening if there's a vote to leave? What happens the next day if there is a vote to leave?
I think Mr. Cameron steps down. We launch a new Conservative leader. Will take over somebody who was on that side of the argument during the referendum campaign, and we have from political anoraks like me, we have a lovely period of change, and nobody knows quite what's going to happen.
That'll do it for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the University of Missouri. Many thanks to Sebastian Malaby, Andy McSmith, Oliver Norgrove, and Mike Smithson for joining us. Our executive producer is Joshua Kranzberg. Our supervising producer this week is Shavila Roscoe-Skate, with assistant producers Aaron Pelish, Joe Carey, and Yulia Alieva. Our studio director is Travis McMillan from RJI. Our audio engineer is Pat Akers of KBIA. For all of us here at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for joining us.